We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
On the Cowboy Sports Network from Learfield IMG College, welcome to the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. Now, here's the voice of the Cowboys, Dave Hunziker.
Welcome to the third in the four-part Cowboy Summer Series. I'm Dave Hunziker. A special treat for you today, a long visit with former Cowboy quarterback Brandon Whedon, and we cover a number of different topics. So I think you'll enjoy this, so stay tuned. Before that starts, a word from our sponsor, Oklahoma Genetics, the sponsor of the Cowboy Summer Series. As you may know, Oklahoma Genetics is the marketing arm of Oklahoma State's world-class wheat breeding program. Later in the show, in fact, you'll hear from Oklahoma State's wheat breeder, Dr. Brett Carver. In the meantime, though, a word about one of their outstanding new varieties. John Smith is an Oklahoma State legend, one of the greatest wrestlers in the history of the sport. So you would expect a wheat variety named after him to be tough, to be a winner. That's exactly what Smith's Gold is. It's developed out of the legendary Gallagher variety, and it pins down many challenges that wheat farmers face. It offers a better canopy hygiene, a later pull-off, and even better baking quality that's been affirmed by the Wheat Quality Council. Smith's Gold also provides Hessian fly and green bug resistance and has improved resistance to stripe rust throughout the growing season. Smith's Gold is another in OSU's Graze and Grain and Golden Grain wheat varieties. To learn more about Smith's Gold and other OSU-developed wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. Coming up, we start our visit with Brandon Whedon on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. This Cowboys Summer Series features former Cowboys star quarterback and NFL quarterback Brandon Whedon. And first of all, bring everybody up to date. What's going on with you right now?
You know, right now, just honestly enjoying some downtime. You know, we've got a bunch of family vacations planned and just trying to enjoy some time with the kiddos. I'm a free agent. And, you know, the way things are kind of shaking out, I think it may be the end of the road. So, and I'm content. I really am. I'm happy with the way everything turned out. You know, I played 7 years longer in the NFL than I ever thought I would. So, very blessed with the way things turned out. But, you know, I'm kind of anxious about the next chapter. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So, no anxiety or significant anxiety about missing the day-to-day competition and the things that go with that? I mean, how's that going? Some guys, they just miss the competition.
That's going to be the most challenging thing, without a doubt. I mean, I think, you know, everybody talks about the locker room and the camaraderie and stuff like that. It's the competing part. I mean, it's a 2-minute drill at the end of practice. It's the, you know, the 1-on-1 drills against a DB, you know, stuff like that, that, you know, I'll definitely miss. But I won't miss training camp. I won't miss OTAs. I won't miss all the meetings about what you're about to go meet about and things like that. You know, I'm going to miss 16 weeks a year during the regular season. That's going to be a challenge. You know, just, you know, obviously the game planning is a lot of fun. But at the same time, you know, and a lot of people know it's a grind. I mean, it's a full blown grind, pretty much year round now. I mean, it's a yearly deal. So yeah, I'm going to miss the competitive part, but I guess that's what the golf course is for. I'll get out and try to find a way to, you know, try to take $5 or $6 from a buddy.
How much different is the coaching, even the relationships? Is that drastically different than it is in college?
You know, yes and no. I mean, you know, football is unique. I mean, because it's when you're at work, you're almost talking a completely different language. You know, you just talk ball all day long, and you know, you're talking in that lingo. So it's, you know, it's different. You know, in college, you only have so much time. You know, you get class in the mornings, you come to work, you come to the facility at whatever 2-3 o'clock, and then you're out there at 7. You know, that you're limited on time. In the NFL, I mean, you're there at 6 and you leave at 5. You know, and so you're with them all day. But I, you know, it's different. I think, especially being a quarterback, it's a little unique because the way that coaches handle quarterbacks and the way that, you know, the quarterback room is constructed, it's just different. You know, the level of respect, the constant communication. You know, you're having a conversation all the time. You're always throwing ideas, talking ideas. What about this? What about that? You know, in college, I don't care who you are. Most guys are like, okay, it's the plays we're going to run them. You know, there's no communication, you know. But, you know, I think I was blessed at Oklahoma State, had some great coaches, guys I still keep in touch with and was very lucky. And same with the NFL. But it's just you have so much more time in the NFL to talk ball and prepare and all those things. But it's just, again, it's just that's the kind of nature of the beast with the rules.
So how much did your knowledge base grow as a result of those conversations? Obviously, you knew a lot coming out of college, but I can't imagine how all of that must have expanded.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I knew a little bit coming out of college, but then I got to the NFL and I'm like, I didn't know anything. I mean, you know, I knew, you know, the basic coverages, but, you know, it gets so much more complex in the NFL, you know, between, you know, scheme, obviously, blitz packages, third down packages. I mean, it's just so, it is night and day different than it is in college football. It's just so much more complex. And, you know, as a rookie, I tell everybody this and they think I'm probably crazy. I don't care if you're the first pick overall. If I'm a GM, I'm going to take the quarterback and I'm going to sit him for 6, 8, 10 games, technically like a redshirt type year, and let him learn. Because when you're throwing the fire like that, I mean, you have so much going on between your ears. It's almost hard to function because, you know, not only you worry about calling the play right, which a lot of guys don't call plays in college anymore. It's all signals. And you get in the huddle and you're like, dadgum, did I call that right? And then you get the line of scrimmage. You're like, man, what was the cadence? What's it on? What's this guy got? What? You can't even process what's going on the defensive side of the ball. So the game is just so complex, and you know, the good coaches find a way to simplify it, but it's just completely different than college football. I could go on and on and on, but you know, like I said, I thought I knew. You know, you only see so many coverages in college football, you know, and then you get to the NFL and you see them all, and you may only see once or twice a game. They just rotate them, and it's again, it's tough. But you know, I will say, you know, having Monk in my senior year helped me a little bit going into it, just because he had that NFL background and could kind of teach things like an NFL coach would teach another quarterback. But again, just, you know, between the terminology and the verb, you know, all the nuances that go along with an NFL system, it was a huge learning curve. I mean, I feel like I'm a relatively smart guy, but it took a lot of time.
Yeah, you think about that. That's the speed of thinking that's required. And then there's the other guys on the other side of the ball playing defense, and they're faster than the guys in college. So you got, obviously, what you were saying, the speed of thinking, and then the other guys, they're a lot faster, right?
Big time. You know, that's, you know, you look at pretty much every defense in the NFL. We'll talk defensively. I mean, you know, you get the best player from each team. And, you know, it's, you know, in college, there's always a corner or a safety or a linebacker you can kind of pick on, where in the NFL, there's no gimmies. I mean, everybody there can obviously run, they can play, they're athletic, they're the best in the world. So that's obviously the biggest challenge is, you know, a guy like Tom Brady has played in the same system for 18 years. I mean, the guy didn't have to study his stuff. He can spend all of his time preparing against his opponent, you know, whereas a guy that, you know, is a young player, new to a system. I mean, you know, it's not a playbook that's, you know, half an inch thick. You're talking a 5-inch binder full of just, you know, just to get the ball snapped. I mean, all the stuff that has to take place. You know, on top of that, you know, on top of, you know, you got grown men on the other side that try and knock your head off. So it's a challenge, you know, I can say without a doubt, playing quarterback in the NFL is the hardest thing in any sport. It's just, you know, that's why you'll never hear me ever badmouth a quarterback, because I've been there. I've done it. You know, I've played well. I've played bad. I've done all, you know, all the above. I understand what it takes to play. It's just, it's hard. I mean, it's hard, and it's, but I enjoy the challenge.
Visiting with Brandon Whedon on the Cowboys Summer Series, how much of an adjustment was it going under center after playing in the shotgun?
You know, it was a big adjustment. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I spent a lot of time working on it, you know, leading up to the draft, especially, you know, obviously my first training camp or my first OTAs. It was a challenge. You know, I'm 6'4", and sometimes it's hard to see. You know, even when you're in the shotgun, it's hard to see. But taking a snap and taking a 5 or 7 step drop from under center is challenging. I think the one thing I did really enjoy was a lot of the play action stuff. I had a lot of big plays off of play action. I kind of grew fond of that, you know, over my first couple of years. But, you know, my rookie year, I was under center more than any quarterback in the league, coming from a system where I never went under center. And I didn't know that until after the year. And I'm thinking, you know, I like being under center a little bit, but I think I'd rather be back in the shotgun where I'm comfortable. It's a huge adjustment, you know. Obviously, a lot of the running backs like it because the running game can tend to be a little bit better when you're under center. You know, just angles and path and stuff like that. But it took some time. It took a lot of work. But by the end of my career, I felt like I could, you know, play the entire game under there if I had to. I don't want to, but if I needed to, I could.
I have to ask, with Cliff Kingsbury being hired as head coach of the Arizona Cardinals and his background offensively, certainly, if nothing else, a cousin to what Oklahoma State does on offense, and everybody wants to know, can it work in the NFL? So I'm going to put you on the spot. Can it work? Can you do it?
I think so. You know, it'll be challenging because, you know, in the NFL, used pretty much every personnel group. Whereas in college football, we were pretty much in 10, maybe 11 personnel. So he's going to have to expand that a little bit. Yes, I think it can, but I think you're going to have to expand it a little bit. I think, you know, some of the jet motion stuff is kind of, you know, there's been a little bit more of that in the NFL. I mean, you know, these coaches are learning, these college quarterbacks are playing these systems. You got to tailor what they're good at to what you're running on Sunday. So the league is adapting a little bit to what college football is doing, in my opinion. So it'll be interesting. You know, to answer your question, yes, I think it can work. They're going to have to expand it, but only if you have good players. He's got a great quarterback that's obviously comfortable in that system. He's played in it. It'll be interesting. I'm actually very anxious to see if it will, because you know the running game portion of that offense is very small. You're gonna have to expand that, get more diverse, and which he will. He's got guys on staff that have been, you know, in other systems. So Cliff's a smart guy. I think I'm anxious to see how it goes. I think he can make it work though.
And with that, I have to ask about Kyler Murray, who in some ways doesn't fit the prototypical NFL quarterback stereotype. Of course, we're not talking about the same offense. What do you make of his chances to be a star in the NFL?
You know, I mean, obviously athletically, he's one of the best athletes in the world. I mean, he's can run, you know, like he can and throw it. He throws the ball a lot better than a lot of people give him credit for. The guy's got, you know, incredible arm, accurate, the whole deal. The one thing I worry about is, you know, can he beat you from the pocket? You know, can you throw the ball from the pocket 30, 35 times a game? And, you know, that's to be seen. I mean, no one knows. But, you know, the way that teams are going to play him and pressure him will kind of dictate that. Every game plan, they're going to try to keep him in the pocket, keep him in the pocket, keep him in the pocket. So the way they rush and the rush lanes are going to be crucial. Because if he gets outside the pocket, he can hurt you. So, you know, from the pocket, I mean, he's going to have to, you know, become a better thrower from the pocket. I mean, that's just like every other quarterback. So I think, again, he doesn't have – I mean, he's got a good running game. He's got a good running back, decent offensive line, got a veteran receiver, a couple guys that can run, you know, on the outside. Like I said, if he can learn to beat you from the pocket, you know, I think he's got a chance to be pretty successful. I mean, the expectations, he's the number one pick, are going to be through the roof. But I'm always leery of that because it's like, you know, you know, he's the number one pick for a reason because their football team wasn't very good, you know. So he's going to a team that's not a very good football team. So it's gonna be hard. It's gonna be an adjustment for him early on, I'm sure. But the guy's got all the talent in the world. I mean, you know, even this little guy. I mean, he, I don't know, 5'9", 5'10", whatever he is. I don't know how he sees because I'm 6'4", and I have a hard time seeing sometimes. So it'll be a challenge for him. But again, never count that guy out.
We'll have more in just a bit. In the meantime, joined by Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University wheat breeder. Of course, our program brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, the marketing arm of the OSU wheat breeding program. So, real simple question. Where does the seed come from that really starts all of this process with the production of wheat?
When it comes to wheat in the United States, it's land-grant universities, believe it or not. And I know that may be hard to believe, because it's not so true with other major field crops like soybeans and corn and sorghum and rice. But in wheat in the U.S., I would say it like this. The flour that's in the kitchen pantry, there's a 75% chance that that flour came from grain that was produced from a variety bred at a land-grant university like Oklahoma State. Now, if you look at the flour that comes from grain produced in Oklahoma specifically, there's a 60% chance that flour came from grain of a variety developed here at Oklahoma State University. Unlike any other crop, unlike any other major food crop that we consume, the universities are highly engaged and they work very closely together in developing this seed. The private sector is also involved, no doubt about it. We work with the private sector. We welcome that interaction. But with no other plan is it like this, where the land-grant universities still provide that seed.
That's Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University wheat breeder. Our program brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, the marketing arm of OSU's world-class wheat research program. More coming up on the Cowboys Summer Series from Learfield IMG College. Once again with Brandon Whedon on the Cowboys Summer Series, and we could never have a conversation without talking about 2011 and winning the Big 12 title. So now that you've sat back 8 years later and you've played in the NFL and experienced all the things in the professional ranks, when you think about 2011 and that magical season, what jumps right out?
Gosh, a lot. I think obviously winning the Big 12 championship was big. A Fiesta Bowl, those were big. But, you know, I think I was talking about it the other day with Gundy on the way to Dallas. We were flying down there and I asked him what one of his favorite games of that year was. And I think the turning point, the pivotal game in that year that kind of got us going was that A&M game at A&M. It kind of gave us the momentum, made us really understand, like, man, we were a really good football team. You know, one of the best teams in the country that year. And I wish I could bottle it all up and do it all over again, because it was just so much fun. You know, just, the memories and the friendships and everything that went along that year. I mean, it was just like it was a storybook type season. I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but it was just one thing after another. Was some of the funnest times of my life. And, you know, I even think back to the first game of the year. You know, we came out in those gray jerseys. Everybody was mad and everybody hated them. And I thought we looked good. And
sorry, I couldn't read the numbers, but then I found out I needed glasses, so I needed to really be quiet.
I don't think you're the only one, but no, I mean, just everything, you know, just there were so many things that year that, you know, we could talk about for hours. And it was just special. It was a special year. Obviously one little hiccup in there that I still lose sleep over. It was a fantastic year.
I wanted to ask you about A&M 2011. It was 20-3 at halftime. A&M was up. Tannehill, who of course played in the NFL as well as a quarterback, has been in the NFL, had a long touchdown run on a quarterback keep play. But what I've been told about that halftime locker room legend is it was very calm. And Todd Monken, that's not typically how he rolls. He's a guy that's pretty excitable. Was that the case? Is that true? Was it a pretty calm locker room? And what do you remember about what happened at halftime when you were down by 17?
You know, it was extremely calm, almost eerily calm. I mean, it was no different than we were winning by 21. I mean, it was just we knew that we were a couple plays away from being in the game, and we obviously down, 17 points is a pretty big deficit, especially playing down there, you know, in that stadium. The one thing I remember is, like, hey, look, we're going to run the same plays, but we're going to play fast. We're going to run these guys out of the stadium. And, you know, the second half, I mean, we ran plays that they started faking injuries. I mean, the guys were, you know, cramping up supposedly, and, you know, we'd get on the ball at tempo them and they would cramp up, you know. So That was the only way they could slow us down. We were just playing faster than they were, and that was our plan going in the second half. Just we knew that we were in better shape than they were. It was hot that day. I remember that, and we did. We outlasted them. We played in the fourth quarter, and we did literally everything we could to hold on and win. But the halftime was extremely calm. There was no panic whatsoever. Even from the staff, the players, no one batted an eye. Everybody was like, we're fine. We knew the players we had in that locker room, and we did. We came out and we played fast, and I've never gotten on a plane after a game so tired. That was mentally, physically, emotionally, the whole deal. That was an exhausting Saturday afternoon.
And fans need to remember, those of you who are younger may not remember, Texas A&M was a top 10 team in the country and was one of the teams that was considered to be a Big 12 favorite going into that year. So it's important to point out, I don't think I've ever seen slow death by a screen pass the way it happened that day, because if I remember correctly, it was one screen pass after another, after another, after another. I've never seen anything like that. I don't know if anyone has.
Yeah. If a name broke, don't fix it type deal. I mean, that was our deal. They were having a hard time tackling. We were getting 7-8 yards a pop, and we still had the option to hand the ball off. It was kind of I hate the word RPO, but it was, basically a run play with an option to throw that screen. And they just had a hard time covering it down. So we kept going to it. And, that ended up being the major reason we won that football game. But, after the game, I can't remember how many times I threw it. It was like 50 some odd times. My completion percentage really liked it. And I didn't mind it one bit. I had to have been close to 80% that day. But, that wasn't our game plan going into the week. We just kind of went to it a little bit and knew they had a hard time stopping it once we got in. And obviously Munkin, the way he was, great at adjusting in game. And we just kind of kept going in the well, and it worked out, paid out for us.
And then after all those throws, the bizarre ending of the game with Justin Blackman taking a shotgun snap and running backwards out of the end zone for a safety. Do you remember how that all went down?
Oh, like it was yesterday. Gunny looked at me. I can't remember how much time. It was like 8 or 9. I can't remember how much time was left. And he's like, can you run around and run the clock out? And I'm like, hell no. Yeah. I was like, no. And so Blackman was like, man, I'll do it. So anyway, he's like, yeah, take a snap, run around, run the clock out, and run on the back of the end zone. I was like, okay, I've never seen that. That was a first for me. But
and you hadn't worked on it, had you?
No, that's not something you practice on Thursday. That was a new one. But it worked out. Like I said, it was probably one of the most unconventional ways to end a game. But again, we won by, 30-29 or 29-28, yeah. 1-point game. But that was a bizarre inning for sure.
What was the edge that the 2011 team had that was special?
And this, again, this will sound cliche, but I mean, that was one of the more tight-knit groups. I mean, there was no cliques, no guys running off on their own. It was, everybody was, from summer workouts to training camp to all that. I mean, it was a truly a family-type locker room. I mean, everybody liked each other. There was no ill will, ill beef with anybody. I mean, it was a if you can get 100 guys on the same page like that, you got a chance to be pretty good. And I've only been on a couple teams. That may be one of two teams that I've been on that are like that. And that's, especially in football, that's hard. But, that we were close-knit. And I think more than anything, I think we all trusted each other. The defense gave up some points and all that, but we knew when it was crunch time, they were going to get a turnover or they were going to get a big play and get a stop or whatever. We trusted each other. And I think, we told them all the time, you get the ball back, we're going to go down and score. And I think they knew that, how powerful our offense was that year. So I didn't care if we won 45-44. I didn't care how the game ended. I think we always knew that at the end of the day that, we trusted each other. It was going to be, we were going to be the ones, walk on the field, win the game.
It's funny you say that, because that's exactly what Rashetti Jones told me about 2 years after that season was over. I said, well, did you ever have any doubt? He's like, well, heck no. We knew if we just got a stop, we just did our job. Whedon and Blackman and Joseph and those guys in the offensive line to go win it. And it sounds like it went both ways.
Yeah, exactly. And correct me if I'm wrong, you would know, but I think we led the country in turnovers that year on defense. And, that was honestly, I know we were great offensively, but that was a difference in the year. I mean, that was the reason we won 12 games, is because, we created big time, at the end of games. I mean, game saving type turnovers. And, I don't think people talk enough about that. I think they talk about how many points we scored and all that. But, man, if it weren't for that defense coming up with big stop after big stop or turnover, I mean, you know, we don't have a chance to win 12 games. So that was again that trust factor. We knew they were going to get a stop when you know times you know when you need it the most, and just give us the ball back. We were going to do our deal.
The tough night in Ames, the loss to Iowa State on that Friday night, just now that you've had a lot of time to think about that, when you think back about that, what runs through your mind?
I mean, it was a long day. Obviously we heard about it first thing in the morning when we woke up, our phones were going crazy. That was a long day. You know what? There's been a lot of talk. Should we have played the game and all that? You know, it was a Friday night. It was a homecoming. There was just so many bad, you know, scenarios for us. It just didn't favor us. But more than anything, my 5 years there, I never was in a locker room pregame and had that feel. We were flat. We had no energy. Normally we had some juice, and we were jumping around, having fun, laughing. You know, we were loose and ready to go play. That night, it was like a lull. You know, it felt different than every other week. And looking back on it, I mean, I noticed it then a little bit, but I really, after thinking about it a million times since then, you know, we didn't come prepared to play, and they did. You know, they played harder than we did that night. They took advantage of the opportunities better than we did. But you know, we had some, you know, obviously some circumstances that kind of stacked up against us, and I don't ever ask what if ever about anything, but I would, if there's one night I could have over, that'd be it. You know, it just, that was a tough one. I mean, I still, like I said, I literally still lose sleep over it, but, you live and you learn, and you know, we were able to still accomplish, you know, a great thing. You know, it was a thriller.
So then a week off, which was Thanksgiving week, and then Bedlam and Stillwater for the Big 12 title. What was it like the 2 weeks leading into Bedlam after losing at Iowa State? And what do you think helped everybody turn the page?
I think everybody's just ticked off. More than anything, we let one slip and we knew it. So in order to get where we wanted to go and play for a national championship, we knew we had to win and win big. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, we knew we had to go in there and really make a statement. And, there weren't many times where on a Saturday I wanted to go back out there on Sunday and play. I mean, that game couldn't have come fast enough. I mean, I was just so ready to get back out there and kind of redeem ourselves and get back on the field. But at the same time, we had the week off. So it was kind of a blessing there as well. I think everybody just, we knew what we had to do. You know, we knew we didn't play our best, you know, against Iowa State. And we knew Oklahoma's a good football team. So being a rivalry that it is, you know, we put in extra time. We did the things that we needed to get it done. And I think that for one night, more than most, is we played pissed off. I mean, I'm sure you remember, we ran the football better than probably than any game I ever played in. I mean, dominated line of scrimmage. Backs ran well. Receivers, I mean, it was one of those nights that we could have ran it. I didn't even need to throw any passes. I mean, we ran the ball so well. And our defense played obviously great. So guys were ticked off. I mean, they were again, we knew we let one slip and we needed a little revenge.
Are you upset they didn't put you in the national championship game? Do you feel like you were slighted?
I do. I mean, we're conference champions for one. The margin, the old BCS thing, you know, how small the margin was, we missed it, was just kind of comical. But, you know, no one wanted to see a rematch. I mean, that was in my opinion, I mean, I know people in the SEC probably did, but, you know, I feel like, I don't think there was a doubt that we were one of the best two teams in the country. And, you know, I always think about what it would have been like if we would have played LSU. I mean, that was a pretty good defense. You know, their offense was average, but their defense was pretty strong. They could run the football. So two completely different teams, you know, to square off in a national championship. That would have been fun to see how it shook out. But, I think we did. I'm not even being biased. I think it was I think we got slighted a little bit, and I feel like we deserved the right to play in it.
You ended up playing another team that probably felt the same way in an epic game in the Fiesta Bowl against Stanford. It was pretty darn good in their own right.
It was. That was, you know, everybody asked me about what game stands out the most, and that one, I know it's the last one, but it stands out. I mean, the way the game started, I threw that interception, stupid interception, and that really lit a fire under me, and I felt like I played pretty well from there on out. But, I knew it was going to be, obviously, you know, with Andrew Luck on the other side and that defense, they got a bunch of guys still playing the NFL and the way they ran the football and, you know, that traditional NFL style pro, you know, downhill type attack on offense. Again, kind of two different styles of ball, but That was incredible. That game, I'll never forget. I was standing next to Scott Verplank on the sideline when they were going to kick that field goal at the end of the game, and he's like, "What do you think? Do you think they make it?" And he goes, "I don't think they do." And I'm like, "I hope you're right." And sure enough, he misses it. And once he missed it, I knew we were going to win that game. I knew for a fact that we were going to win that game. And I wish Colton Chelf would have gotten the end zone on that one just to make it simple. But obviously we had the best kicker in college football that year, and they will get it done.
More with Brandon Whedon is coming up. In the meantime, a word from Oklahoma Genetics and some information about one of Oklahoma State's great wheat varieties, this one, Gallagher. And Gallagher has been one of Oklahoma State's most planted wheat varieties since its creation. And there are many reasons why. First, Gallagher has superior fall forage production and grain yield. Its broad disease package is centered on leaf rust and stripe rust. Gallagher is also resistant to Hessian fly and offers above average milling and baking quality verified by the Wheat Quality Council. And Gallagher is another of Oklahoma State's graze and grain wheat varieties. To learn more about Gallagher and other Oklahoma State wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. More to come with Brandon Whedon after these messages. It's a Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. Brandon Whedon with us on the Cowboy Summer Series and covering lots of topics. And we were talking about 2011, but let's go back even beyond that to 2010 and the arrival of Dana Holgorsen. When he showed up and he started working with you guys, What were you thinking? I mean, obviously you had played against Colorado and started, won the big game in 2009, the big comeback coming off the bench in the second half, but everybody knew you were going to be the starter, and here's Dana Holgorsen. What was that like?
It was awesome. I mean, it feels like forever ago, but we knew what kind of offense he brought, because what he brought with Houston when they came to Stillwater and beat us, was that 2008 maybe 2009, but so we knew he had an explosive offensive system. So I still, to this day, and people may disagree with me, but I think that was the one hire that Gundy, that is a program changing hire. I think it changed everybody's attitude. It changed the practice structure. We were fresher. His mentality kind of rubbed off on some players, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. Guys were more lax. They were just more, they played free. We played freer. And I'll never forget him. He came in, obviously, with the crazy hair, and he's a wild man and always had the Red Bull and the whole deal. But I always had so much confidence in him. I begged him, and people don't know this, but he took the job at West Virginia, and I begged him to call plays in that Alamo Bowl because I wanted one last deal. I had so much trust in him. I literally felt like he could never call a bad play. And that all started back in, you know, when he first got there. I could just tell by the way he communicated, by the way he taught, by the way he he demanded excellence all the time. He would lose his mind at practice if something went wrong. But come Saturday, we were ready. We were prepared, and we played fast, and we had good players. But, you know, I had never met the guy until he obviously came to Stillwater. I still have so much respect for Dana. He started my career, kind of got me off on the path I went on, obviously, and I'm very grateful for that. But again, I think for Oklahoma State football in general, I think he was kind of the one piece that kind of put it to where it is today. I think he was kind of the start of it.
Then there was, out of that, in those early days, the evolution of the diamond, or what has been the inverted wishbone, whatever you want to call it, which was basically, as I understand it, created by Dana and Joe Wickline, conversations they had, their stories about them, plays being drawn on a napkin, whatever. When that concept was introduced to you, what was your reaction to that? Because suddenly that just went like wildfire, not only in college football, but professionally. When you were introduced to the diamond and what they were thinking regarding that, what was your reaction? What did you think?
Well, I loved it because defenses couldn't do a whole lot coverage-wise, you know, against that. Because, one, you got three guys in the backfield, so you got to put an extra guy in the box to stop the run. You can do so many different things in the run game. But more importantly, is it put Blackman over there by himself. He's a single receiver. You know, they're either going to double him, they're going to take two guys out of there, or it's going to be one-on-one, and we can play action. We can just throw it to him. There's a million different things you can do. So, you know, I kind of saw what it was going to do as far as opening up the playbook even more so than it already was. But we had some unbelievable run schemes that Coach Wickline had kind of, I don't know if he drew them in the dirt or napkin or whatever, but we ran the football extremely, extremely well, but we also had a bunch of big, you know, we ran flea flickers. We ran, you name it. I mean, we found a way to run it out of there because, again, you had the best receiver in the country over there on an island one-on-one. I mean, I don't know many quarterbacks that don't like that. Just it cleaned the picture up. It just made everything a lot cleaner. And, you know, it helped us kind of get to where we were.
Going back to your performance and sort of things that you went through, one thing I remember is when you had a super week of practice, you really almost felt sorry for the opponent because all heck was going to break loose. Was that a thing with you or no?
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad you asked that question, because remember the big misnomer was when, you know, the whole practice thing, and yeah, I wasn't a good practice player, and that's such, they got blown out of proportion like crazy, you know. So people, I don't know why people still bring that up, but, you know, I always felt like if I practiced well and I made the throws during the course of the week, that, you know, I always felt it takes the gun shyness away, you know, once you get, you know, when live bullets are out there on game day. So, you know, there were certain weeks I definitely had better week, you know, weeks of practice. That's like every other player. But that game, and then also the Texas Tech game, you know, we won 66-6. That practice, I mean, I remember that week of practice, you know, I really love that game plan that week one. But, you know, we didn't miss for many throws. And it was a crisp, ball was never on the ground. It was, you know, we knew that we were on the right page, you know, on the right direction there. So, yeah, I think, I've always, you know, again, I always enjoyed practice because I felt like it kind of gives you, it's an indicator how the week's going to go, the weekend's going to go. And that was the case for us. I mean, we had weeks where we played practice like crud, and then we go out on, you know, Saturday and find a way to win, but we just don't play very good, you know, and, you know, it, practice how you play, the whole deal. I mean, that's a true deal. And that's, you know, and you try to tell kids at a young age that, but, you know, you practice the bad habits, they're going to show up on, you know, show their head on Saturdays. So when we practiced well, we knew we were going to be hard to beat.
Best throw you ever made, what was it?
In college, I would have to say that Thursday night Colorado game, the one in the back corner to Blackman. You know, I kind of off schedule, wasn't from the pocket, kind of got flushed out and was rolling right, and I saw him just run along the back end line there, and I just let it rip, had a little adrenaline there. So that thing was on a rope.
So Zach Robinson was out that game. Alex Cate started and struggled mightily in the first half. So you're going to the dressing room at halftime. What's going through your mind?
I'll be honest, I didn't think I was going to go in. I mean, I was hoping, but I mean, if you remember that, right, I left my helmet on the sideline that night, and you know, when they came in and told me, you know, I was the first one out of the tunnel. I ran on the field, you know, before everybody else, and kind of got going. But yeah, you know, I didn't even really have time to think. You know, it just all happened so fast. And I remember walking up to Russell Okung, and I'd never put it down. You know, and he's like, "I'm like, hey man, you guys give me time. We'll rip these. You know, I'll shred these guys," or whatever I said. And I'm sure he was looking at me like, "Yeah, right, kid," you know, whatever. And we did. We all played pretty good that second half. I'll never forget the one story that stands out that I tell people and they laugh is, I think Alex started 0-for-9 or something that game. So we hadn't had a completion, and I threw a little swing pass to Kendall Hunter for like 4, and I got a standing ovation. I'm like, "Dadgum, it's this easy, huh? this is gonna be too easy." But no, that you know, that night was special. I mean, I didn't get a wink of sleep that night. The adrenaline that was going through my body, I've never felt like anything like that before. So that was a lot of fun. Like I said, I wish I could bottle that one up and do that one again too, because that was a special night.
We continue on the Cowboy Summer Series. Now we take a break and catch up with Oklahoma State University wheat breeder Dr. Brett Carver. And I've learned a lot about the wheat breeding process, but also sort of the naming process. And of course, many of the varieties here have true Oklahoma State ties, like Gallagher and Iba, for example, Smith's Gold, named after John Smith. But as far as the success of a variety and kind of knowing as you create it and put it out there that, yes, it's going to be successful, how do you know? I mean, do you know?
Well, we'd like to say we do know, but sometimes we just don't know. And sometimes in that case, we might release two varieties instead of one. And I think the best example of this was a more recent one, Gallagher and Iba. They were both descendants of that really good, strong, hardy, widely adapted variety called Duster. And since they were sibs, they were brothers or sisters, however you want to call it, we wanted the farmers to think of these varieties as being off the same tree. So we used names that most people kind of connect together, Gallagher and Iba. And when we released those two, I thought, in my mind, Iba was going to be the one that would capture the hearts and minds of our farmers. Sure enough, it didn't. Gallagher was the one. And so at the time of release, Ibbets seemed to be the more consistent variety. But Gallagher seemed to be the one that could had the higher potential. Under certain conditions, it could really hit a home run. And it turns out that some of the traits we really weren't thinking about as being so important were indeed very important to the farmer. And it's those traits that they picked out as, you know, the ones that justified moving Gallagher forward. And it's been the most popular variety in Oklahoma for the last 4 years. It's like the record business. We really thought Iba was the A side and Gallagher was the B. This is like the Beatles Revolution and Hey Jude. Revolution won out.
That's Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State wheat breeder. This program brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, the marketing arm of OSU's world-class wheat breeding program. This is the Cowboy Summer Series from Learfield IMG College. Cowboy Summer Series continues with Brandon Whedon as we run a few more questions by him. We appreciate Brandon being so gracious with his time. What do you see now professionally? Broadcasting? I mean, we always thought when Brandon Whedon's done playing, he'd be an unbelievable broadcaster. Would you consider that, or do you have other plans, or do you even know?
You know, I don't know for certain. I'm definitely going to explore it. It's something I've always wanted to do. My wife gives me a hard time. I'll be watching a game, or college NFL, and I'll say something and, you know, say Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are calling it. And, you know, they'll say the same thing right after I say it. Or, you know, it just, it seems like, and she always jokes with me, like, Bryn, you could do that. I'm like, those guys are pretty good, you know, but I just feel like from a quarterback's perspective, I think I can explain the game simple enough to kind of give the, you know, your casual fan, you know, a little bit of knowledge, but then, you know, just kind of talk the game from a quarterback's perspective. I think, you know, you kind of see the big picture, whereas, you know, some guys, maybe an offensive lineman, they're really focused on like five guys up front or maybe the D-line or whatever. But as a quarterback, you got to see it all. And I think I would really enjoy it. So, you know, if I am for sure done, I've already kind of had the discussions with my agent to kind of get the ball rolling there. So I think he's kind of working on it a little bit. But, you know, right now I haven't made a decision 100%, so I don't know. But I think if, you know, like I said, if you put a gun in my head and said I was done, that's definitely where I would start.
You know, professional baseball, what a journey. Professional baseball, Big 12 champion quarterback, 7 years in the NFL. I wouldn't put it past you at some point to play professional golf, certainly on the celebrity tour. I know you could do that. I mean, you've done a ton. I mean, you think about other great athletes. You're in a very small percentage, first to ever play professionally, but to do all you've done, you're talking about a small, small number.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I got to pinch myself. I'll be honest. I mean, when you're in the moment, you don't really have time to take it all in and grasp it. But, yeah, I mean, I've been extremely, extremely blessed. I mean, heck, I came to Oklahoma State never thinking I'd play it down, hoping I would. But I didn't know, you know, and dang sure didn't think I'd ever play in the NFL for 7 years. So, you know, I've been very blessed. I've worked my tail off. I mean, I've worked extremely hard to get to where I'm at. But at the same time, I've been put in some really good situations, you know, with a lot of good players around me, a lot of good people around me, which, you know, that's half the battle right there. So, yeah, like I said, my golf game is not even anywhere close to being good enough to go join those guys on any tour. But, you know, I'm going to keep complying. I'm gonna play. I mean, I tell Melody that I'm going to do as many little sectionals and qualifier stuff around here. I'm just going to get my game back to where it was decent. You know, I haven't been playing much, but, you know, who knows? We'll see. I'm excited. Like I said, if it is the end of the road, I'm content with the way everything's gone. You know, I'm actually honestly excited about what's next. I mean, who knows, you know, the way things are going to shake out, but, you know, hopefully things will go my way and do something I enjoy.
That's former Cowboy quarterback Brandon Whedon. We are back to wrap things up after this on the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. Back for a final time on the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. And before we wrap things up, a word about another of Oklahoma State's outstanding wheat varieties. You know, in sports, there's nothing like a double team that works. It really throws the opponent off their game. Well, Oklahoma State's wheat team has created a wheat variety that in essence serves as a double team. A double team wheat variety? Yes, it's Double Stop CL Plus. Here's what we're talking about. Double Stop CL Plus offers not one, but two genes of herbicide resistance. It has many other great qualities. It's widely preferred by millers, and Double Stop combines high yield, test weight, resilience, and show wheat quality in one variety. That double team comes in handy because Double Stop CL Plus tunes out rye and other tough weedy grasses. And Double Stop CL Plus offers a competitive canopy, is acid soil tolerant, and stripe rust resistant. And Double Stop CL Plus is another of Oklahoma State's Graze and Grain and Golden Grain wheat varieties. Check out Double Stop CL Plus and other OSU-created wheat varieties by logging on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. Join us next week for another in our Cowboys Summer Series programs. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Hunziker. This has been the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College.
On the Cowboys Sports Network, from Learfield IMG College, this has been the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Cowboys Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.